You're listening to Raising Anchor, the Rhode Island FC podcast, now part of the Blazing Musket family. We're glad you're here. Hello, I'm Matt Entrekin, and this is Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. Joining me today on the podcast is a very special guest, RIFC forward Mark Doyle, who's here in the studio to talk all things about his soccer journey and where he's been and where he's going in his professional career. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm all good. All good. Happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is always ours, and we really appreciate you taking the time to carve out some of the time in your day to be able to jump on here. You know, we always start with all of the players. We ask the same question, you know, how did you fall in love with the beautiful game? But I think before we get into that, I'd love to understand how exactly the beautiful game and getting into it works in a place like Skerries, your hometown, going through the youth academies there. Was that the start of it for you, or does the love of football start somewhere much earlier, much deeper than it does maybe in the American sports system?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, for me, I can't even tell you what age because I was that young. So, but I know as soon as I was able, I was kicking the ball around the house and stuff. So, yeah, obviously my dad was big into football. And yeah, like I remember just all my mates growing up, we all just played, and we were played on the same team growing up. So yeah, I mean the very, you know, start the young academy down in Skerries Town FC, which is my first ever club. I think you can go in when you're like 4 years old. So I think that's when I was in there. Whenever I was allowed to go, I was there. So yeah, that's definitely when it started. And then obviously growing up, just playing with my mates all the time. A lot of them still play now with Skerries and with other local clubs. So it's deadly. I always try to get to their games whenever I can, as well as them tuning in for mine. So yeah, no, it's good.
Is football, obviously it's the biggest sport, but it's not the only one, right? Like there's other, I know Ireland recently did pretty well in rugby. Are there other sports when you're growing up that you're exposed to that can take on the same impact in your life, or is it all football all time?
Yeah, for sure. There's other sports, and rugby is quite big. It's quite big in Skerries as well, where I'm from. I had never had an interest in it, but Gaelic football I played in school, and I played locally as well. So I remember a time when I was playing Saturday and a Sunday. Saturday I was playing football, and then on the Sunday I was playing Gaelic football as well. So yeah, I mean, I think every Irish kid at some stage has been involved in Gaelic football or hurling or camogie at one stage. So yeah, I definitely was as well. And obviously in school, my school was kind of like an Irish school, so we didn't have a football team, but we had a Gaelic team. So obviously I was going to play that, you know, to get out of class or whatever it was. So yeah, no, that was definitely playing that as well. But football is big, but obviously it has a lot of competition too.
For listeners, they're probably listening right now going, what is Gaelic football? Can you provide a quick summary for the uninitiated?
Yeah, it's, I wouldn't say a mixture of football and rugby, but you're allowed to use your hands. You can run with the ball if you bounce it and solo it. And then to score, there's like a normal kind of football goal with posts that go up as well. So if you hit it over the bar, it's 1 point. And if you score a goal, it's 3 points. So yeah, that's more or less it. It's more physical, I'd say, than football. You get away with a lot more than you would in football. And it's good for that. I mean, when you're younger and you're getting stuck in, so it toughens you up a little bit, I think. But yeah, no, really good sport. And I think a sport that every Irish person is proud that we have, because it's so big at home. And you know, an amateur sport as well for those who play it. You know, they don't get paid, and they're you know, the brilliant athletes. And sorry, I don't know what that noise is. I'm trying to turn it off. Keeps going off. I'm getting notifications. I don't know what it's from. I'm trying to block them. Sorry. I'll okay. So yeah, it's yeah, good sports, something that we're really proud of at home. And the All-Ireland final is in Croke Park. There's 80,000 people at it, like, and you know, the players aren't even getting paid. It's kind of mad, but that's just the way it is with the culture. And it's brilliant.
So back to football itself, you know, I'm asking as an outsider here, how difficult is it to make the leap from the local academies to the teams in the Ireland football divisions, whether it's first team or premier? Is it something where it's pretty cutthroat, or is it something that over time you get exposure to, you get your chances to make it into the bigger systems?
Yeah, I would say it can be cutthroat for sure. Growing up, like, some people are, when their kids are, you know, the best thing, you know, you're ever going to see. And some of them don't even play football now. And that's kind of how it goes, I'd say, everywhere. But obviously there's good competition, especially in Dublin. Like, obviously where I am, there's a lot of good players, obviously a highly populated area compared to other parts of the country. So really good level and good standard in the academies and stuff, but not really any like full-time academies, you know, when you're younger and growing up. Obviously it'll be, you know, as there is in most places, go to school during the day and you're training in the evening type of thing, but still good level for sure. And yeah, it can be cutthroat. You know, I remember getting or not making certain teams on trials and stuff like that when I was younger, and found that difficult enough to deal with. But that's part of the journey, I think, and it's part of what makes you kind of, you know, grow into whatever type of player you do. You have to have these sort of setbacks, and I think it's good to get them when you're younger rather than have a, you know, everybody wins when you're a kid type of mentality. So makes you stronger in that regard.
So you eventually do enter into a professional youth contract with Drogheda United, a team that I'm curious, was that something where, again, because of the locality, because of the proximity, was it something where you targeted as a place you'd go, or what made that club special for you to go and lend your talents to?
Yeah, so that was about 30 or 40 minutes from where I'm from in Skerries, where I lived. So to go to Drogheda was kind of one of the closest League of Ireland clubs, even though it wasn't in Dublin. It was just outside. But that was just an open trial that I went to get onto that, into the under 17s there. So obviously just went up to the trial, I remember, and got in, thankfully. And obviously from there, it was quite quick that I moved up to the under 19s, down from the 17s, and then started playing obviously all over the country, because that was the League of Ireland system, which was different from just playing the younger age groups in Dublin. You kind of just stick to Dublin. We played a lot of you get more exposure, I suppose, to teams from and players from all over the country, which is great. And then it mustn't have been, you know, a year or two when I was there, and I was beginning to train with the first team as well. So that was great too. And then I think the following couple of years, I had maybe one more year at 19s and kind of in and out of the first team. And then I was with the first team kind of full time then, after they'd been there for like a couple of years. So that was a good experience to be young and to be in and around the first team and training with them. Even at one stage, I was playing a lot of games with the 19s, but I was fully training with the first team and traveling with them sometimes on a Friday, and then playing with the 19s on a Saturday or Sunday. So sometimes two away games in a weekend and stuff like that. But I was happy to do it, obviously, at the time.
So, you know, like you said, your under 17, your under 19 careers positioned you to finally get a senior debut against Waterford at the time. I have to ask, though, when I was looking at your earliest professional minutes on the senior squad, it was a lot of substitution opportunities, which probably is not something that people would be unfamiliar with. But when you're a striker and you're coming in that late in the game, what's your objective in those early days to show the coaching staff that you deserve even more time?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes from training, probably, when you're there, rather than what you do in the game, because depending on what situation you're coming on in the game, obviously, if it's to protect the lead, you're kind of just running around and pressing, and you're not, you know, obviously you're thinking about scoring if an opportunity comes, but if you're just put on sometimes to just run around and bring your energy and press and work hard, then obviously that's what I was doing. But it wasn't really, to be honest, it wasn't difficult when I was only getting on as a sub at that age, because I was kind of just happier to be there. You know, obviously as older as you get, the more you want to play, and you're less happy to be coming on as a sub. But I was also getting my game time with the under 19s on the weekend if I didn't play with the first team. So in terms of minutes and game time and stuff, I was still pretty happy in terms of getting some for the first team, and then obviously playing my 90 with the 19s or whatever it was. So it was kind of the best of both worlds for me at that time.
You were basically double dipping.
Yeah, literally. I remember with having an away game sometimes on a Friday, and then you get back late, and then on Saturday you're going with the 19s again. But you were doing a bit of both, but any minutes with the first team at that age you were delighted with. And obviously I was probably only 17 or 18, so I wasn't obviously playing too many games, but just the experience of being involved and being in games with fans and stuff was great, because then you go play the 19s the next day and it was like just your man and Dara watching the game. So
So with your club, it was really fascinating to read through. You've witnessed some of the highest of highs and the lowest of lows going through the promotion relegation roller coaster, including playoffs. Yes. Having witnessed both the incredible parts and the devastating sting of some of the lesser parts, you know, can you describe those feelings both as a player and a person that went through it? It's such an alien concept. Like, we all know as Americans what pro rel is. We see it, we watch it, we feel it, but like, it hasn't come yet here home to America. Like, what was that like for you in the first years of your professional contract, to bring your club up, then go down, then to bring them back up? Like, what was that like?
Yeah, it was a tough to see the relegation. And I think obviously I had, you know, under 19s, whatever else, like other stuff going on. Like for some of the lads, obviously this was their, you know, this was everything for them. And the older lads, you know, they're talking about, you know, all the lads have families, have kids, and, you know, this is a source of income for them. It's not always, it wasn't always their full-time job, and they had other stuff a lot of the time going on. But, you know, the difference between the divisions in terms of, you know, wages and everything like that, that people probably don't see from the outside, is pretty big. And the difference in being in the top division and just for the extra few quid that people can earn. And obviously in the league at the time, there wasn't too much money being thrown about, and certainly not in the lower end of the Premier Division or in the First Division. So, you know, it really is tough to see and to experience when you get relegated, and you see people that, you know, might not get a contract the next year because, you know, they can't commit or whatever it is. It's tough to see. But I think fans as well, obviously, you know, they go through every single emotion possible in that sort of thing, and they're not happy. And I think you're exposed to fans not being happy and being very forward about that, and letting you know and letting the team know that they're not happy and stuff. So that was a big thing. And obviously getting promoted is the complete opposite. You know, everybody's so delighted, the fans love you, you're the best, you know, you're the best thing ever to them. And obviously opportunities for players once they're in the Premier Division, you know, to, you know, playing on TV and just being exposed to playing in the best stadiums in the country against the best teams. That's where everybody wants to be. And I think, you know, to have the opportunity to be able to do it is the best part about promotion and relegation, because it doesn't matter how small your club is or anything like that. You can take a small club, and if you do things right and you run things right and you have a good group, then, you know, anything can happen. And I think a part of being a small team that gets promoted is the fact that the big teams have to come to your place, and if they play in a small little ground and, you know, with an intimidating atmosphere, whatever it was, like that's all part of it. It's not all just, you know, you buy into the league and that's it, you know, like it is here. But it's a great experience. And I remember when we got promoted, like all the lads on the team, just going at it for a few days. I was very young, so I wasn't too much involved. But when we got promoted a while later, I got to experience that a little bit more and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a good experience, and I think something that definitely sticks with you.
I've been fascinated with the Welcome to Wrexham series, specifically not for the football parts, but the way the community kind of ebbs and flows with the success of a team. And it's weird to see how, you know, players that when it's the relegation season, they can be vilified. And when it's the promotion, they can be, you know, raised onto this altar of being heroes. What's it like in the community when you've had a successful season or a failed season? Is it something where like it's hard to go out in public, or when you're super successful, is it that you're getting, you know, free drinks anywhere you go? Like, how does that work in the community when football is that important?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously in Drogheda at the time was, you know, I didn't live there, so a little bit, you know, a little bit different for me to say, but there was a few lads who were local, and obviously they would feel it a little bit more. But I think fans just care a lot, you know, and I think sometimes when a fan is maybe expressing their opinion about, you know, getting relegated or whatever it is, you know, they pay their hard-earned money to come and watch and support, and they buy the jerseys, they do everything, like they're, you know, they're fully entitled to say, you know, say their piece, and even if it's going to hurt a few feelings sometimes. But I think you just become used to it, you know. I got very used to, you know, maybe listening to abuse from the stands, or even online and stuff after games, whatever it is. People do feel it, and you know, they feel it because it's important to them, and you know, as I said, they put their money into it and everything like that. And I think, yeah, to experience the other side of it is class as well, you know. They're, you know, the feeling, and the you can remember good nights that, you know, got your promotion, or big games that you won, and you know, you remember all the fans from that and the atmosphere, and you can feel it all. And I think that's kind of the beauty of football, you know. You can get the highs and the lows, and I think as a player you have to stay kind of level-headed throughout everything. But as a fan, I'm sure you're up and down all the time, and I'm a United fan now. I'm down really all the time. So, then during the international break, I watch Ireland games, and I'm down then too. So I'm never really up, but yeah, that's part of being a fan. You know, there's good times and bad times, and you just, you know, you stick with it, and you're entitled to say what you feel.
Well, we'll have to focus on some positives here for a second. And your 2020 and 2021 seasons saw some of your greatest performances in your football career, still with Drogheda United at the time. Not only did you win the first division title, but you went on to be named Player of the Year by the league and also the supporters group. And you were able to find the back of the net 13 different times across both your first division competition and then your later Premier Division competition. I've heard that you know, the football culture is otherworldly in anywhere outside of America. Did you ever get a chant named after you being the Player of the Year, or having that high of a goal tally? Is there any Mark Doyle chants out there that we need to know about?
I think there might be a couple. I'm not sure they're appropriate for the podcast, but I know there could have been a few floating about back then, but I honestly don't really remember. But yeah, mostly, you know, bad language, I would say. So I'm not gonna start singing it now, but yeah, for sure, there's when you're playing well, the, you know, fans will say anything. So they get incredibly creative, that's all I'll say.
what do you attribute to the highlight of your success in those particular years? Was it right time, right place? Was it the team built around you? Was it your relationship to Tim Clancy? What helped you kind of hit that stage in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I was just really happy, I think, at Drogheda, and playing all the time was, you know, just, you just get confidence from that. And when the manager keeps picking you, you know, you feel, you just feel good in yourself, and obviously training everything. I was COVID around that time as well. So the year we won the league, actually, to get promoted, was, there was no fans there to even see it. And, you know, as we talk about fans, they get disappointed when you're down. And then we finally go up after, I think it was 3 years we had down in the first division, we finally went up, and then they weren't even there to be able to see it. So that was unfortunate. But we had like a shortened season, and I remember just coming back from the COVID break, and just like all I did during COVID was train and run, because you couldn't do anything else, you know what I mean? So yeah, that's all I did. I remember we all came back, and the whole team was just, you know, really fit, really ready to go. And yeah, we went on a great run, and it was a shortened season. I think we had 18 games instead of the usual 36. But yeah, no, it was a great season. And then obviously when we went up, it was just momentum really took us. We got a few new signings in when we went to the Premier Division. We brought some like more experienced players in who had been in that league for a while. And for a lot of us, it was kind of our first time really playing regularly in it. We'd been in it when we got relegated, but we were young and didn't really play too much. And so this was the time we were playing more regularly, and we came in, and yeah, it was just momentum from that. Everything was building. The club was flying, because, you know, all the fans were coming back for after COVID. Everyone was delighted to get back, and obviously to come back into the Premier Division as well was class for them for the few years that they'd been through in the first division. But yeah, I think it's a mix of things for sure, but definitely the confidence of just, you know, playing every game and coming off the back of winning the Player of the Year for the league in the first division, stepping up to the Premier Division, I just felt really good. And we had a good core, the group that won the first division stay with us in the Premier Division as well, which definitely helped, because there was that familiarity there, and obviously we brought in some experience as well, which definitely helped too.
Is it true that you, and this is what I read, that you once went to a preseason training with a tube from an IV drip still attached to your hand to do everything you could to earn your spot in the starting 11 for your team?
Yeah, that is true. That is true, I can say. I don't like missing training ever, like, but when I think the manager was kind of new at that stage, so I wanted to show I was around still, even though I was sick.
That's legendary. So yeah. Speaking from your time, you moved on then and joined St. Patrick's Athletic FC along with head coach Tim Clancy. As he made the move, he makes you a priority signing in the offseason. What was the motivation to change teams in league, especially coming off of some of your best performances that you've ever had, and making that move?
Yeah, so the main thing for me was the full-time football and European football as well. So Drogheda, obviously, even though they're in the Premier Division, they train in the evenings. They kind of have like a hybrid model now these days. They're not in every morning, but a lot of the players are still full-time, but they train in the evenings. But at the time, you know, I just wanted to play full-time football, and there was a chance to do that at St. Pat's, and obviously they were going to be in Europe as well. They just come off the back of winning the FAI Cup in 21, I think, and yeah, they were going to be in Europe, so it was going to be, and that was something that I definitely wanted to be a part of. And yeah, that was my first time being in, you know, a full-time professional environment. So obviously the leagues and stuff are the same, but to have the chance to go in every month, to wake up every day and play football is, you know, that's the dream when you're younger. And when I was at Drogheda, I was in college, so that was actually perfect for me. The timing wise, I finished up when I was with Drogheda then, so I think the timing wise it was ideal for me to go into a full-time environment then. But always loved Drogheda, always, you know, still do keep an eye on their results and everything. Same with St. Pat's and all the lads I played with and everything. So yeah, no, good memories at Drogheda. And but yeah, that was the main drive, the European football, and a chance to win some trophies as well, and obviously challenge at the other end of the league really.
Speaking of, in 2022-2023, you did see yourself scoring 12 goals, but like you said, you had these huge soccer moments independent of your regular season performances, scoring in Europa qualifiers against Bohemians, and then also winning the coveted FAI Cup. Do you look back at these big moments as what they were for you, or was it just more of you doing your job on the day?
No, I definitely look back, especially the FAI Cup final in 2023. That was, you know, probably the best day of my life really so far. It was the record attendance at the Cup final. I think there was 44,000 people there or something. It was, and it was playing in the National Stadium, you know, where the Irish team play. It was, yeah, so it was brilliant. It was just having all my family there and everything from like people from all over, all my mates, everyone that I've grown up playing with, and to go there and to play so well as we did on the day as a team, and obviously to score was a class feeling, and I don't think I'll ever forget it. And obviously the celebrations and everything that we had after, and I remember driving back to we drove past the stadium before we went to a hotel after when we won it, and like the streets were just full of fans outside the stadium, and the Pats fans were just took it over, and you know, the bus took about 20 minutes to go past this little part of the road that would have taken 10 seconds really, because the fans just weren't letting the bus go, and they were celebrating and flares and everything. It was just, yeah, it was, yeah, a brilliant day and something that I just always remember, you know, and always, I think it's memories that I have forever, and photos with the trophy, everything like that. It's just, something that every time I look at it, it brings back great memories.
Speaking of St. Pat's and your time in Dublin, you know, again, another alien thing to most of the cities in America is it's very rare to have multiple teams stacked within your city limits, especially in the same division. But Dublin supported not only just one team, but total of three teams in the active Premier Division, with not only the St. Pat's, but the Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne FC. Does it get really territorial around Dublin proper? And I was also surprised to learn that most of the derbies come from a suburb to the north in the Bohemians. How does that all work out from a territory standpoint?
Yeah, so the Dublin derbies are great games to play in. I mean, the fans are like, you know, they're always sold out, those games, and they're always obviously away traveling fans is always that part is always sold out as well, which makes for a really good atmosphere. There's obviously a lot of banter between the fans and stuff, but there is like some hatred as well, I would say, which is good. Obviously never like to see it cross the line, but the fans really don't like each other, but those games are just they're really good to be a part of. Shelburne and Bowes are on the north side, and Rovers and St. Pat's on the south side of the city, so that's another kind of dimension to it as well. So people are the north and south in Dublin is kind of a that's a talking point in itself. So
so don't wear a Mark Doyle kit on the north side of Dublin is what I'm
saying. Yeah, well, I'm from the north side, that's the thing, and then I played for a team on the south, so but a lot of players end up doing that. But for the clubs themselves, it's an important kind of aspect to it, I'd say. And obviously the north two clubs are even closer to each other then, so they have their own rivalry, and the south are the same. And then, but every game in Dublin is good. The atmosphere is always brilliant, and you know, tackles are flying about, and the fans are right on top of it. So yeah, no, it's brilliant.
Basically, it made kind of change into Gaelic football then again, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Some games you would think that. Yeah.
So complete different direction here, but I wanted to ask, what is it like to have an actual FIFA player card? Having been in the Ireland divisions, you know, you're out there, there's ratings. What's it like to see attributes assigned to you as a player from someone you've probably never met from a video game company? And also, do you ever play as yourself in those games?
I definitely have done in the past. I wouldn't say I do anymore, but when I first was on them, I was delighted and I was playing for sure. But the ratings are always pretty like inaccurate for like a low level kind of card or team. I don't think they put too much thought into it unless you're, you know, one of the top dogs. So I know they always have everyone's just slow. I mean, I feel like they make everybody in the league just slow, and then whatever else about graphics and everything like that, the player looks nothing like you. But no, it is cool for sure to be in it, and obviously when you see yourself in the game, it's cool. But you know, I don't think anyone's ever happy with the rating that they receive, so that's one thing about being in it. You're just thinking, like, what about the rating, you know what I mean?
And before we move over to your career here now, I wanted to ask, do friends back home ever get it mixed up when you tell them that you're now playing for the USL, considering that there's a USL in the third level of the pyramid in Ireland?
No, they actually don't. I think that's is that Ulster maybe? So that's
Ulster,
not even
Ulster Senior League, yeah.
That's not even from where I'm from. So maybe if it was up there, some of them might, but the Leinster Senior League is the one that Scarry's Town, my local club, is in and stuff. So thankfully no confusion on that.
No one's thinking that you've gotten sacked into the ultimate demotion.
Yeah, exactly. Not that quickly.
But that's not the USL, like you said, that you signed for. Instead, you joined a club across the pond in the US, a place that didn't even have 11 players signed by the point that you started having a conversation with the club. I have to ask, what in the world prompted you to take on this adventure, considering most players in North America are trying to go the direction that you're actually already at?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely just something different for me. I've always kind of had an interest in playing over here. I remember thinking about trying to get a scholarship to come to college here. But because I was starting to play at the time with the first team at Drogheda, I decided against that. But I think for coming over here, it's very much something different than at home. There's 10 teams in the Premier Division, you know, if you play everyone four times, you know, you're going to the same stadiums, playing against the same teams, the same players. So, it was kind of just something different that I wanted. I think, you know, originally when I was playing at Drogheda and at Pats, I was always thinking, you know, if I do well here, I might get a move to the UK and stuff. But that never came about. And, you know, when I was getting to 25, I was thinking, you know, you can't wait around forever for these. And there's definitely something else that, you know, I would be interested in. And that's to come to the US for sure. And obviously, I just, I decided to get then to really try and pursue it and see if there would be any interest out there. And I kind of got an agent out here who was going to try and see what the story was and see if there was any sort of interest. And then obviously Rhode Island came up, and I was delighted then to talk to everyone and find out a bit more about it, and thankfully come.
It's interesting, Coach Cano, as he built this team this season, there's been a lot of construction where he leveraged player relationships that he's had over the course of his playing and coaching career. And you don't seem to fit that mold, at least that I'm aware of. In fact, so much so that he broadcasted his travel plans to Ireland, and he was at the games that you were at, and everyone was trying to figure out who is he scouting. Is there some sort of familiarity that exists before you signed that helped build this bridge to join Rhode Island FC? Or are you kind of technically the first true and true scouted player that really got brought onto this team?
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's no connection before. I don't know if I was firstly scouted or whatever, but obviously once my name came up from my agent or whatever, they obviously checked it out. And obviously Dave, being Irish system manager, he might have maybe known a few people to ask, or, you know, knowing the sort of level that it was and that it would be, you know, kind of, I think, a similar level to the league at home. So, I think that was more it than obviously them coming to find me out of nowhere. But I think once they heard about me and obviously did a little bit of research, then they became, you know, interested, and we kind of had a chat from there. But there was no prior relationship or anything like that.
So the kind of, before we move into the actual season itself, I guess I want to ask, do you see North America as a longer-term investment for players, the international players specifically, knowing that there's all these extra hoops that you have to jump through, especially like just to maintain the eligibility to play, whether it's through visa programming or just like the number of roster spots that can be had in almost any of the domestic leagues? Is it, you know, looking back, you're almost through a complete season now. Is it worth it to tell other players interested that is a viable investment you can make in your soccer career?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, level wise, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of really, really good players here, and the standard is really good. And obviously this is the second division, so you go up another one to the MLS, and obviously you've got, you know, some world stars in that league, and obviously some young players coming through as well. I think there's a lot of that in the MLS academies and all that stuff. So I think they're definitely improving. And I think the level wise now is in a good position, and it's only going to go up, I think. So yeah, for sure, I think there'd be I'd definitely recommend it to anybody that was thinking. And I know for sure I've had some players from back home kind of get in touch and just to ask me kind of what it's like and if I'm enjoying it and that type of thing. So yeah, it could be interesting. So I think the loop of the visas and stuff like that can be a little bit complicated, but I think the club has been very professional with it. They took care of everything in terms of the visas and everything like that. So yeah, that was ideal. But yeah, there's loopholes, but I think it's worth it for sure. Once you kind of, you know, I think you have to buy into it, you know. I think it's not ideal always playing on like turf a lot or playing on a half baseball pitch is pretty mad, like for me. You know, there's a couple of teams at home that have an AstroTurf as well, so that's, you know, nothing new, but to, like, mostly grass all around, but here is probably the opposite, especially in the east. But I think if you buy into it and, you know, you look past that and you look past the, you know, some of the half baseball stadiums and, you know, no fans and stuff like that, but you look past that and then you have a club where, like us for example, where it's our first year and we already have, you know, great support. So I think, you know, you look past that sort of that side of it and you just buy in, and then it's definitely worth it. Because if you look at the actual product on the pitch and the level of the players and stuff like that, I think you'll definitely be impressed and be able to kind of see what everyone's over here is trying to do. And yeah, I think that's the main thing, kind of to not look into that too much. And, you know, the fact that it's called soccer and everything, I know people at home are always laughing that it's called soccer. I mean, like, it's doesn't really matter, like, what it's called or where you're playing, because, you know, you look past that and it's a really good league.
Do you ever, does the S word ever slip out because you've been here now, or will it always be football?
Honestly, it slips out when I'm like telling somebody what I do, because they're from here. If somebody asks me like what I do for work, I would say soccer, to be honest, because, you know, you kind of have to. I doubt they'd take me for a football player if they saw me anyway.
You don't look like a linebacker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I don't think they'd be too confused anyway, but I would just say that to be safe. But yeah, that's kind of the only time I really say it. But yeah, you have to adjust, I think, sometimes. So.
So every fan that's been to at least a game knows of your exploits, especially in the first ever match in club history, where you subbed on in the 87th minute and in just 3 minutes later cemented your place in RIFC history and lore, forcing an own goal. But I think if you ask anyone, fan or fellow player, they will give you credit for that goal. You know, looking back to that game, and maybe it wasn't just the first game, but have you found the moment that validated your decision to come and play at the USL? And have there been other moments like that on the pitch, like maybe the derby where you scored your first accredited goal? Like, where was it when you felt validated in the decision to come here and play for not just Rhode Island FC, but for the USL?
To be honest, in preseason, as soon as I kind of, you know, got to know the lads and kind of saw the level of the training and everything, I was happy. But that I wasn't also surprised, because, you know, I wouldn't have come here if it was a step down. You know, you want to make sure that you take a step across or up, you know. So I did my research on the league. I watched it a lot and I knew I was coming to a good league, so that wasn't surprising to me. But yeah, the first game was obviously great. I just wish your man just left it, and then I would have tapped it in, but I don't know why he did it himself. But what can you do? But yeah, no, the derby games were great as well. And to be honest, our crowds and everything, it feels quite like, you know, like back home, really, with the, especially with the singing section behind the goal. It kind of, you know, it's not really like some of the games here that we have played, especially away from home, where there's, you know, barely anybody at it, and you're playing on a kind of an empty stadium or whatever it is. Obviously, all of our games have been quite well supported, and obviously we've had a few sellouts in there as well, which is class. So yeah, no, all of our games at home, and the derby at home as well, Hereford was a great game. And that just, yeah, that really felt like a game at home, really, a Dublin derby, maybe you could say.
You've delivered in big moments this season, and your presence has been felt in just about every single game, coming on in whatever capacity that's asked of you. I guess I would ask, as a striker winger, you know, is there additional pressure from the forwards to earn those goal contributions? And it, whether there is or isn't, what have you been working on in your personal game this season to improve that?
Yeah, there's definitely some pressure, but I think it's pressure that you put on yourself. Like, it's not coming from anybody else that, oh, you have to have this amount of goals or assists. But I think you put that pressure on yourself when you're a forward player. You want to have contributions. You want to have those stats and those numbers as well. But I think you want to play well overall performance-wise is probably, you know, well, for me, is more important what you're doing, a job for the team. If you can score, then it's great. And if you can assist, obviously, even better. But I should have more goals this year for sure. I think I should have at least 5 or 6. But I don't. I like to think I contribute in other ways when I'm coming on, whether that's pressing or, you know, just working hard for the team if we're up a goal and we have to defend or whatever it is. I mean, whatever sort of minutes, obviously I want to start every game like everybody does. But I think, yeah, I've been a little bit disappointed with my contribution in terms of goals. I think it's probably my lowest one so far. But in terms of what I'm working on, I'm very much working as playing as a number 9 now instead of a winger, which is, you know, in this formation is how we play. So I haven't played as a striker in years since I was a kid. So obviously played usually as a winger, but I think I have some attributes that I can definitely use as being a striker. And I think I've been doing a lot of work on hold up play and trying to get relationship with the other striker, whoever it is, JJ or Deeks or Noah as well. So, whoever it is, you're trying to work as a pair mostly in our formation, or depending on how we're playing, but usually in that front too. So, playing with my back to goal is probably something that I've worked on the most with the other strikers. I think they're more used to obviously being up there as in a more central position, you know, where you're when you're facing away and you're trying to link play and running behind and all that sort of stuff. But I think what I always try and do is, no matter what sort of quality or how the game's going for you, I think if you always kind of just work hard and press and do a job for the team. I know we as a team we love to press and get after teams, so I always try and do that regardless of anything else that's going on. And then obviously our quality can sometimes not go your way and go up and down like everybody's can, but I think with your work on and off the training pitch, it's just trying to stay consistent and trying to improve on those little things. And I definitely feel like I have got better and more comfortable playing with my back to goal and stuff like that. So that's been a good thing for sure.
There's 3 games left as of this recording. Big games, Loudoun and Miami at home and Charleston away. What do you hope to get out of these last few games for yourself, for the team, and for the fans?
Well, yeah, I think obviously everybody's targeting 3 wins and trying to get a home playoff. I think that would be a brilliant achievement for a team that's in its first year, and especially given how we started. We didn't have a bad start, especially performance-wise. A lot of the games were good, but all the draws and everything, the repeated draws that we were getting at the start, was frustrating for our players and staff and obviously fans too. So I think if we were able to finish in at a home playoff, that would be unreal for us. So we're gonna try our 3 games. I mean, starting on Sunday, hopefully we can do that. But definitely, just as a team, it's 3 wins. That's all you can aim for. And then obviously, depending on how the game's going, you know, and performance wise, you can take other things. But you aim to win, obviously, every game. And personally, I want to pop up and, you know, score some important goals towards the end. So whether that's in the playoffs or whether that's, you know, in the last few games to try and get us to where we need to go, then I'd be delighted with that. You know, I do have some goals left behind this year. So if I could produce them in those moments, I'd be buzzing.
I think we would all love to see some clutch soccer elimination goals coming your way. as we wrap up here, when we first met, we joked how you had followed in the footsteps of the great saint Robbie Keane, who also came to America as a forward, an Irish Irish forward. I at the time we didn't ask the question, so I want to go back to it though and put you on the spot. Between the two Keanes, who's the greater Irish footballing legend though, Robbie or Roy?
That's Roy for me. Yeah, quite straightforward with my United connections and stuff. Obviously being a United fan, I'm going to choose him. But yeah, Robbie Keane, obviously brilliant as well. Completely different players as well. But yeah, I'm in the Roy Keane camp for sure.
If Robbie ever ends up coaching the international team, you may have just gotten yourself in trouble, but we'll cross that bridge.
I think I'll be waiting a while for that call, but we'll see.
And then finally, you know, I love to ask players, what do they do when they're not wearing the kit, when they're off the pitch, especially for someone who has transported their entire life? What have you been up to off the pitch? What are your hobbies? What are the sights and bites that you've been experiencing, especially with fall now here? What's been going on in your personal life?
Yeah, so obviously my girlfriend is here with me as well, so that's been great. We've had a lot of visitors as well so far, and everyone that's came has really enjoyed it. But we've had my family, her family, so we've been busy with visitors and trying to bring them around. And we've gone to Newport a few times with them. We've gone to we went to Salem, actually. I know that's Massachusetts, so rivalry, but yeah, we went there as well. So we've just done like little small day trips like that, which is nice. The weather in the summer was brilliant as well. For me, by far, it was the hottest summer I've ever had. So, you know, the hot summer in Ireland is like, you know, 16, 17 degrees. So for me, training these in the 35 degrees sometimes was challenging, but got through. And I got used to it, I think, after a little bit as well, which was good. But yeah, apart from that, I mean, on the weekends, we're away, or if we're at home, it's kind of just chilling out on the Saturday, maybe go and get a coffee and come back and watch the Premier League or whatever until it's time to go. But yeah, never like to do too much on the day of the game. But the day after, I always try and do something nice around the area. But there's a lot to do, and we really enjoyed it here so far.
That's fantastic. I know that you'll find so many things to do with this fall season in full swing. And then, of course, making a deep playoff run into that postseason soccer. So, Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. We can't wait to see the goal contributions that you're going to have for the remainder of the season. I'm going to call it now because we all know you've got it in you. Thanks again for joining the podcast. I really appreciate it.
No bother at all. Thanks very much.
In the meantime, make sure to check out our friends over at The Blazing Musket at theblazingmusket.com for all of your New England soccer coverage and Rhode Island FC news. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, and TikTok at RIFC Podcast, our Instagram at Raising Anchor, and then we have our own website at raisinganchorpodcast.com. Mark, anchors up. Let's go get these points in the last three games and make a deep run to the playoffs.
Absolutely. Let's go.
Awesome.